We're holding Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph at the top. The Mishnah told us a case where you had two couples had gotten married. Then when it came time for Knisa L'Chuppah, which is Chuppah in Gemara terminology, is not what we think of as the Chuppah with the four poles and all. It means the actual place where they first have relations. So like the Yichud room, but even more than that, because in the Yichud room, you don't have relations either. It would be more like the place where they go the first night. Anyway, there was a mix-up, and each woman went with the man who was not her husband. So now, the Mishnah described, therefore, so each of them is chayev when they realize their mistake. They're chayev achatas for the issur of Eishes Ish, because each one of them, of course, is the woman of somebody else, is the wife of somebody else. If, in addition, if the two men were brothers and the two women were sisters and the women were nida, then each of them is chayev for four chatois, because you have each one of them has done four isurim, Eishes Ish, his brother's wife, his wife's sister, and a nida. We're talking about, again, that it was all b'shogeg, but nevertheless, shogeg yibung achatas, so therefore that gives them six, so therefore, and the Gemara had said that altogether, considering there were four people involved, and each one has to bring four chatars, that means that altogether they bring 16 chatars between the four of them. So the Gemara says, Uman hai tana de isle isu kolo ve isu moisif ve isu basachas. Now, which tana is it that says that in our Mishnah, they're going to be chayev on each of these counts when now you have the discussion that we had in the Gemara on Lamed Beis and Lamed Gimel was on the topic of when we say isur chalal isur, when do we say that even though something is already osur, it becomes more osur because of an additional isur that's chal on it. So we discussed the opinions of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon on the subject, where we said Rabbi Shimon may not hold of that at all, or according to Rabbi Chiya, he holds of it in the case of Isur Basachas, when the two Isurim kick in at the same instance, as we're going to talk about now in the Gemara, which one of these are that. Then you have, so we've discussed, there's three different things. The Isur Basachas, which is where the two of them kick in at the same moment. An example would be, let's say a person does a malacha on Shabbos, which is Yom Kippur. Both Shabbos and Yom Kippur begin at the same instant. Therefore, when he's over on one, automatically he's over on the other. At the moment when a particular action was also to him because of Shabbos, at the same moment it becomes also to him because of Yom Kippur. That would be Isur Basachas. Isur Moisif and Isur Kolo, we discussed in the previous sugya. Isur Moisif is when you have that there's more people who are included in the Isur than were before, and therefore we can say once they're included, then he's also included as well. And Isur Kolo would be the other way around, where he had things that were mutter to him before and now are also to him on other grounds, and therefore it can give him an extra Isur on this one as well. So the question is, which Tana would say that all three of those, Kolo and Moisif and Basachas, all apply over here? How do we have all of those? So Rashi explains like this. Let's work out the scenario. Reuven first with Mekadesh Rahel. At that point, you have two Isurim Basachas that are on Shimon, that are between her and Shimon. Namely, that she's Reuven's wife, which makes her Shimon's brother's wife, and she's not going to be mutter to him unless there's a case of Yibum, and that she's an Eishes Ish. So there you have two Isurim Basachas. Then when Shimon is Mekadesh Rochel's sister Leah, then you have an Isur Kolo, because previously, Reuven was already Osir in all the sisters, but Shimon now becomes Osir in all of Leah's, in all of Rachel and Leah's sisters, because they're all his wife's sisters. So that's an Isur Kolo, because he's now Osir. Therefore, he's now in the other women. Therefore, he's now Osir in Rachel additionally as a Chos Isha. Even though she was already also to him being his brother's wife and being an Eishes Ish, then we have an Isur Kolo. Now, Rochel at least was still mutter to Reuven at that point. But then when she becomes Nida, then she's also to her husband as well. So that's an Isur Moisif, where before at least one person, namely her own husband, was mutter to her. And now even he is also, because she's a Nida, that's the definition of Isur Moisif. So therefore, so we have all three things. We have Issur Kolel and Issur Moisif and Issur Basachas. Which Tana do we find that would say that all three of those, that all three of those are applicable, and therefore that they be chayav an individual chatas for each one? Now, in the previous sugya on Daf Lamed Gimel, we discussed the possibility that maybe Rav Yossi would hold that way. But the Gemara wants to find a Tana. The Rif has a very long discussion about this Gemara, explaining it in detail, which is a little uncharacteristic of him, because usually the Rif deals only with things that are applicable nowadays. Karbonas are not applicable nowadays, so usually the Rif doesn't deal with such things. But here he says, because there are explanations from previous Chachamim before him where he says they didn't explain it correctly. So therefore, he goes into some length over here explaining it in detail. So it's true that we found that maybe Rav Yossi holds that way, but we don't know that for sure. We want to be able to find a Tana who says explicitly that he holds of all three, Moisif, Kolel, and Basachas. So which Tana would that be? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Rav Meir. So that would be according to Rav Meir. The Tanya, Ne'od, it's not really, it's a Mishnah in Christmas. Yesh oichal achila achas, you can have a case where a person eats one kezias of food, v'chayev aleha arba chatois v'oshem echad. And the result of that is he's chayev for four korbanos chatas and one korban osham. Namely, the case is tomei she'ochol chaylev. A person was tomei, he ate chaylev v'hu noiser, where that chaylev is also noiser min mukdoshin, and that chaylev came from a korban. Well, being noiser, it has to be from a korban. But the point is, being mukdoshin means that it's means he's chayev me'ilo for it. V'yema kippurim, and it was on Yom Kippur. So far we have he ate kodshim when he was tomei, which is an isur kores. Then he ate chaylev and noiser and Yom Kippur. And he ate chaylev and noiser, which are also things that are chayev kores. So those are machayev him and chatas as well. So far we have three. It was Yom Kippur, that makes four. And he has to bring a korban me'ilah and asham me'ilos as well, because what he ate was from kodshim and is off limits to him. Even a kohen would be also to eat the chaylev, because it's supposed to be brought on the mizbeach. And the Mishnah continues, Rav Meir oimim hoisa shabbos v'yitzia b'fiv chayev. Rav Meir says that if it was Shabbos and he carried it outside while he had it in his mouth and he walked outside with it in his mouth, then he's chayev additionally for that, not just for eating on Yom Kippur, but also for carrying on Shabbos. So Rashi explains over here that actually the Gemara in Chrysos says that Rav Meir holds, the Gemara discusses over there in Chrysos, does the Isser of Hatzah V'Achnosah, the 39th Malacha, Hamotzi Mershus L'Rushus, does that apply on Yom Kippur or not? We know, of course, it applies on Shabbos. Rashi explains, based on the Gemara there, though, that Rav Meir holds it does not apply on Yom Kippur. So he can't say that just because it was Yom Kippur and he walked outside with it in his mouth, he should be chayev. Only he has to add that it was Yom Kippur shechalias b'Shabbos. The point, though, being Tosfos disagrees with that particular detail. Tosfos points out the Gemara there goes on to say that it's not so, because in fact there is a chiyuv of Hotzah on Yom Kippur. So therefore, Tosfos learns differently. That we're talking about over here. The fact that when he walks out on Shabbos, which is Yom Kippur, with this food in his mouth, then he's over on a malacha of Shabbos and on a malacha of Yom Kippur, and that can also be counted that he's over on both of them. Tosfos also adds, by the way, usually when a person carries something in his mouth, he wouldn't be chayev at the shinui, but food in his mouth is a perfectly normal way. It's a perfectly normal thing to walk with food in your mouth. Therefore, that's considered a malacha. Anyway, so let's work it out. We see that according to Rav Meir, we have all three. We have Issur Kolel, Issur Moisif, and Issur Basachas. Because, let's work it out, when the animal first came into existence, it wasn't yet kodshim. At that point, its chaylev was already osur, because chaylev of a domestic animal is always osur. Then, but it was still mutar b'hana. Then when you were makdish it, now you have an Issur Moisif, because Because before it was mutar bahana, now being that it's kodshim, it's also bahana. So therefore, that's iser moisif. That also adds a new dimension of iser to eating. So far, he's chayav for two. Now you have the fact that he's a zur makes it off limits for him because now it's kodshim. Then when it becomes noiser, there's another dimension of isu because now it's also to be brought on the mizbeach. So now, therefore, that's again isu noiser. That's again isu moisif, and therefore now it becomes now it becomes an isu moisif. Even for a kohen, it would be also as noiser. So far you started off with one isur and you have two isur moisifs on top of that. Now when the kohen becomes tamei, until now he would have been mutter to eat meat of kodshim, now he becomes also to eat meat of kodshim. So therefore, now we have an isur kolo where that brings in a new dimension of isur onto the chaylev. Now, though, on Yom Kippur, then you have Yom Kippur, you have another isur kolo, because if it's not Yom Kippur, he'd be allowed to eat chulin. Now Yom Kippur, he's not allowed to eat anything, so therefore that brings isur kolo. So far, according to the Chachamim, we have isur moisif and isur kolo, we do not have isur basachas. Reb Meir adds the detail that if it's Shabbos and Yom Kippur, then he's also chayev for both of those. That's Isur Basachas, because the moment Shabbos begins is also the moment Yom Kippur begins. So we see that Reb Meir clearly says, so again, even though we could maybe deduce from what Reb Yossi was saying before, that he holds of this Isur Kolo and Moisif and Basachas, but we didn't say it explicitly. Here we have explicitly where Reb Meir is telling us that he holds of all three of those. Therefore, our Mishnah, which also involves Isur Kolo, Isur Moisif, and Isur Basachas, has to be like Reb Meir. Okay, so the Gemara asks, but a Meir al Libidaman. Now, in turn, let's ask, by the way, you know, you have the famous story involving the Ramban and his Talmud Avner, where this Avner went off the Derech and became a high-ranking minister or bishop or something, and then one Yom Kippur he orders his guards to go summon the Ramban to him, and in his office he takes a chazer and kills it and cooks it and boss it and cooks it with milk and eats it, and then he turns to the Ramban very chutzpahdik and says, so how many Yisurei Kores have I been over on? And they get into a hole. And the Ramban tells him four, and Avner tells him five, and the Ramban gives him a look, and he still had enough derech eretz to not argue with his rebbe. But that was all. How do we get four or five? Is based on this idea of Isur Kolo, Moisif, and Basachas. Because if you go work out the details over there, you'll find for example, the pig was always osur, but it was mutter bahana. Then when he cooked it with milk, it became osur bahana as well, and so on. But he was mutter to eat everything else. But now because it's Yom Kippur, then he's also and so forth. So you can work out the same kind of thing where he's over on several Yisurim. And you have, of course, the end of the famous end of the story where Avner tells that Ramban, the reason I went off the Derech in the first place is because you told me everything in the world, everything that ever happens to any Yid is going to be hinted at in Parshas Hazinu, and I couldn't believe that, and therefore I figured if that's not true, neither is anything else. And then Ramban told him the remez from Amarti, Afeim Ashbisim Enesh Zichram, where the third word, the third letter of each of the words there spells out Reb Avner. Akitzer, we know the rest of the story that Reb Avner that this Avner ended up doing tshuva and then disappeared and then disappeared and nobody knew what happened to him. But anyway, there's a story in Jewish history that involves this matter of Isur Kolo and Moisif and Basachas. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So for Reb Meir al Libidaman. Now, in turn, we need to ask Reb Meir's opinion that he holds of all of those. Now, Reb Meir had two Rebbeim, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. But we have a twist over here. In the case of Oichel Achila Achas, in the case that we just had, where he eats one kezias of food, he wasn't necessarily intending to do a mitzvah. But in our Mishnah, where we're talking about two men who got married, two men and their wives who got married, and now there was a mix-up, the fact is they were intending to do a mitzvah. The mitzvah of getting married, which is the beginning of the mitzvah of Pru Uru. So now, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue within that point when what's called Tav B'Dvar Mitzvah. If a person is trying to accomplish a mitzvah, and in the course of it, he made a mistake, which ordinarily the action that he did would make him Chayev HaChatas, is he in fact Chayev HaChatas or not? So we have to figure out. Rav Meir al libe de man. So now, when Rav Meir says, and if we're going to say that our Mishnah is like Rav Meir, and we're going to say that Rav Meir holds, even when he's trying to do a mitzvah, the fact that he did something that makes him chayav kares, b'mezid, means that because it was b'shogeg is bringing a chatas, but which of his Rebbeim does he hold like in that? Ia libid Rabbi Yeshua, does he hold like Rabbi Yeshua? Can't be. Ha'om atol b'dvar mitzvah potter. Rabbi Yeshua says, in a case where a person is making a mistake while he's trying to do a mitzvah, then he's potter. Namely, the Gemara, the Mishnah in Shabbos describes a case where a moyel has two babies to do a bris milah for on Shabbos. One of them is supposed to be on Shabbos. The baby was born the previous Shabbos. It's a milah bismana. The other one was actually born the next day, Sunday. So the day for his bris is not until tomorrow, Sunday. The moyel got mixed up and did the Sunday baby on Shabbos. So it was Tavid Vav Mitzvah. The fact is he didn't accomplish a mitzvah because it's before the eighth day. The mitzvah is not ready to be accomplished yet. And still, Rabbi Yeshua says he's potter because he was Tavid Vav Mitzvah. He was trying to accomplish a mitzvah. He thought that he was doing a bris for the Shabbos baby. So in our case also, you have exactly the same scenario. He thinks he's doing a, Reuven and Shimon each think they're doing a mitzvah by doing the Be'ilas mitzvah, the first relation with their new wives. It turns out instead they did not accomplish a mitzvah at all, and on the contrary, they did a serious aveda of Eishes Ish and the rest of them, the rest of the Isurim that we said. Nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yeshua's logic, they should be potter from chatas because they were tovid by mitzvah. So it can't be that Rabbi Meir is going according to Rabbi Yeshua. Ela libid Rabbi Eliezer. On the face of it, he would have to be going like Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says, not necessarily. No, you could actually answer that. You could actually answer that. In fact, Rav Meir is going like Rabbi Yeshua, because you know why Rabbi Yeshua says in the case of the two babies that he's potter is hani miligabitinoikis, specifically when it comes to the babies. He's in a hurry. He knows he has to get the bris milah done before Shabbos is over. And he knows today is the eighth day. It has to get done today. Otherwise, otherwise the mitzvah is not being done in the best possible way. So therefore, you can say that when he did the wrong bris on Shabbos, it's not just tovid bar mitzvah. It's tovid bar mitzvah when he didn't necessarily have a chance to check into the situation. Avolhai, but in the case of the two weddings over here, kiven de ein zmanei bohol, he's not in such a hurry because not like they have to, there's no particular time for the mitzvah. It's not like they have to do the be'ilas mitzvah that night or else. So even Rabbi Yeshua wouldn't call that tovid va mitzvah. It would be their responsibility to check into the situation and make sure that he's got and each chosan, each kala, make sure that they're with the right one. And if not, then even Rabbi Yeshua is going to be mechayev. So the Gemara says, "Varek truma de ein zmanei bohol v'kapater." Why? We see that Rabbi Yeshua holds that a person is potter when it comes to truma. We're truma, a kohen eating truma. And he made a mistake involving that. There's no deadline for eating truma. Zmanei bohol you can think of as meaning there's a deadline. So with a bris, there's a deadline. You have to get it done before the end of the day on Shabbos. The Be'ilas mitzvah, we're saying there's no deadline. But truma, on the face of it, there's no deadline either. V'kapotter, and still Rabbi Yeshua says that if there was a mistake involving truma, then he's potter. D'tnan, we learn in a Mishnah, hoya oichel v'truma, suppose a kohen was in the process of eating truma, v'noideshu ben grusha ben chalutza, and then all of a sudden we find out two edim came and said that his mother was a divorced woman or his mother was a chalutza, which makes him a cholol, which makes him also to eat truma. Rabbi Eliezer mechayev keren v'chomesh. Then Rabbi Eliezer is going to say that he's considered like any other case of a zor who eats truma. So he's going to be chayev to pay the keren, the principal value of the truma, plus a chomesh, plus the extra 25%, as usual when a zor eats truma. Rabbi Yeshua poter. Rabbi Yeshua says he's poter. So if he says that he's potter over there, that because Tavid Vav Mitzvah. So therefore, that means even when there's no deadline, then Rabbi Yeshua would still say because he was Tavid Vav Mitzvah, he thought he was accomplishing a mitzvah because it is a mitzvah for a Kohen to eat truma. Therefore he's potter. So
So Gemara says, "Ho itman Allah." Well, you know that there was said about that in the Gemara in Pesachim. Amar a bibi barbaya hocha b'truma be'erav Pesach haskinan. We're not just talking about truma throughout the year. Here we're talking about with truma, which is chametz, and he's eating it on erav Pesach. So therefore, there is a deadline. Dizman a bowl. There is a deadline because he wants to eat it before the time is over, and he has to burn it. So yes, even in that case of truma, we can say that Rabbi Yeshua limits his rule of tov and bar mitzvah potter only when there's a deadline. So in that case, in the case of milah, there's a deadline. He has to get it done that day. In the case of truma, there's a deadline because it's erev Pesach and he has to eat it before zman achilas chametz. Whereas in the case of the two marriages in our Mishnah, there's no deadline. If they don't do the Be'ilas Mitzvah, if they don't do the Chuppah tonight, they can do it tomorrow night, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua is not going to say that they're potter because Torah B'dvar Mitzvah, because they should have taken the time to check out the situation and make sure that everything is correct. So all that is one way of explaining Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah. The Iboyesema, another way you could make it work, another way is you don't have to say that our Mishnah is going according to the mayor. You can say the Isu Bas Achas Ba'alibidir of Shimon. We can instead say that the case of our Mishnah is where all the Isurim were Chal at the same time, and our Mishnah would be going according to Reb Shimon. Because previously on Daf Lamed Gimel, we explained that according to Reb Shimon, and even Reb Shimon, who doesn't always hold Isur Chalal Isur, he agrees that he holds that they do not. Once one Isur is on something, it doesn't leave room for another Isur to be Chal on top of it. However, even Reb Shimon agrees that if it's Isur Basachas, if the two Isurim come at the same time, for example, Shabbos and Yom Kippur, then he is over on both of them, and he's Chayav for both of them. Well then, so we can make our Mishnah work with Isur Basachas, where all four Isurim came at the same time. So therefore, then we don't have to say that Reb Meir is picking sides between Reb Eliezer and Reb Yeshua. We can say rather that our Mishnah is like Reb Shimon, who holds of Isur Basachas, and then fine. Well, the question is, B'shlema kula mashkachas lahu. Well then, most of them we can find a way to make that work with Isur Basachas. The Shavinu Shliach B'Shavu Inu Shliach. Because let's say now we have to consider if it was a matter of that, for example, Reuven went over to Leah and was Makadisher, and Shimon went over to Rachel and was Makadisher, even if, as far as we know, it took place at the same exact instant, that would be a thing that we talked about before in Armasechta called Efshalatzamtzim or E-Efshalatzamtzim. When you have two things that are done when you have two human actions that are done, or not even human actions, we talk about the original case if it was two animals being born, two potentially firstborn animals being born at the same time, is it really at the same time, or is it one as a fraction of a second before the other, and it's just we can't tell with our senses which one came first. But on the face of it, so you have a machlokes Reb Yosi and the Chachamim about that. The halacha is e'efshal tzamtzim. We know that one of them came first. We just don't know which one. So over here, if it was a normal case where Reuven was mekadesh Rachel and Shimon was mekadesh Leah, then necessarily one of them took place first, and it's not Isur Basachas anymore. So then necessarily we'd have to say, for example, that Rachel is already also to Shimon on the grounds of being his brother's wife and an Eishes Ish. Fine, those two are Isur Basachas. But now to also make that now in addition, she's also as his wife's sister because Shimon was Makadosh Leah. That happens only afterwards. That's not Isur Basachas anymore. In order to make it work according to Shimon, we need Isur Basachas. So fine, we could have the case where the two brothers, let's say, made a joint shliach, and the sisters also made a joint shliach. So now the shliach of the brothers goes and brings the kiddushin, and gives it to the shliach of the sisters, and he says whatever the lashon would be. In other words, he says that each respective one of you is mekudesh to the respective brother. So that way you could have basachas. That way you could have the isurim of eishes ish and eishes ochiv and achos ishtoi are all chal at one and the same time. There, it's not a matter of efshal atzamtzim or efshal atzamtzim, because the fact is there is only one action that was done, namely saying hareyatan mikudoshes, whatever the lashon would be. So therefore, so that would be considered basanas.
Wouldn't that have to say names spell out once to Reuven? When you're doing the kaddish, when you have to say with city, you have to the name of who.
No, you don't have to say the city. You don't have to anything. No, in fact, you could even have. We'll learn Be'ez Hashem in Masechta Kiddushin a year and a half or so from now. Be'ez Hashem, we'll talk about that. If you have, for example, a couple were Oisik bin Yonik Kiddushin, that they were previously talking about Kiddushin, and then he gives her something and doesn't even say it, he doesn't even say Hareyat Mekudeshesli, then the Kiddushin is still Chal. So you could have a scenario like that. You could have where Reuven has been dating Rachel, and Shimon has been dating Leah, and they now decide to get Mekudesh, and each group now appoints a shliach, and the shluchim go one over to the other, and each one and one gives kiddushin, and the other one accept on behalf of both of them, and the other one accepts it on behalf of both of them. So you don't even need to have any statement made at that time because they were osik b'inyanei kiddushin before that. But you could also have, let's say, for example, imagine, for example, instead of the second woman being named Leah, instead, let's say the second woman is named Sarah. So let's say the shliach says each one of you is mekudesh to the one who shares a your initials, so Rachel to Reuven and Sarah to Shimon.
But by saying that, one came before the other one.
No. But that's what I'm saying. If he just says Hareyat mekudeshes. Each one to the one who shares the same initial as you, let's say, then both of them take effect at the same moment.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Anyway, so you could construct such a scenario. Elam nidos heichem ashkachasla. But what about the nidos? How is that? How do you have the that they became nidah at the same moment as the kiddushin? One or the other. If they were if the kiddushin came first, then she's already eisha seish and achos isha and so forth, and the issue of nidah according to Reb Shimon could not be chal. And if they were nidah before, then the other issurim can't be chal. So how would you have that they're all chal at once? And the answer is Amar Rab Amram Amar Rab b'shoifes mitoch yud gimel la'achas shloisha aser. The case would be where these women became nida before their husbands were 13, and they continue after their husbands are 13. And the point of that is lechiyuvi inhu. The point why we're mentioning before and after 13 is to be mechay of the men, because below bar mitzvah they're not chayev. They're bias, a bia from age 9, as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta. But to be chayev achatas, they're only chayev when they're 13. So now when they turn 13, then, so we're talking about, in other words, Rashi says that we're talking about that they did kiddushin in advance, having in mind that it's going to take effect on their 13th birthday. So now before their birthday began, their respective wives became nida, and now they're continuing to flow into the time after they turned 13. So that is lechiyuvi inhu. The reason why we mentioned 13 is that's what we need in order to be mechayev of the men. And mitoch shneim also, la'achas shneim also, lechiyuvi inhi. And then we also have that it was before and after the girls' 12th birthdays, which that way we're mechayev of them for the same reason. In other words, because they're not chayev and achatas until they themselves become gedolos, which means they're 13. So Rashi, in other words, explains that the scenario would have to be as follows. That the boys and the girls, the two boys and the two girls, are exactly a year apart in age. Rashi gives the example that they were all born on Aleph Tishrei, a year apart, but we obviously don't necessarily need it to be Aleph Tishrei. The same would apply any other day during the year. We're just using that as an example. But in other words, suppose that the boys were born Aleph Tishrei exactly 13 years ago. The girls were born Aleph Tishrei a year later, so exactly 12 years ago. The boys gave the kiddushin again through their shliach, as we're saying, in such a way that it should be chal the next day, which is the day that they become gedolim. So now, if the girls now become nida right before the end of their 12th years, so it's true that they were nidus before, but they weren't osur to the boys because the boys weren't yet chayiv and mitzvahs, and the women also were not yet chayiv because they weren't bechlal mitzvahs. Now, when they turn 12 and 13 respectively, where their birthdays all begin at the same moment, because it doesn't matter what time of the day they were born, of course, we know the birthdays all begin at Seisik HaChavim for all of them. So now, as soon as the birthdays come, all of these Yisurim are chal on them of Asachas. This is similar to the way in the Gemara on Daf Lamed Gimel, it gave an example where you had a where you had a Kohen who was a Katan, and he was already a Baal Mum, and he was already Tomei, and then on Shabbos, we said he became he developed Shtei Sairus, where therefore now the Isur of Baal Mum and Tumah come on him at the same time. So here, similarly, because the boys turned 13 and the girls turned 12 all at the same time, and they were Nidda before, and they're continuing to be Nidda now, then therefore we have it is an Isur Basachas according to Reb Shimon. Now, with that said, though, Tosfos and a lot of Rishonim have a lot of problems with that. Tosfos points out one problem is if the boys were ketanim, then they can't. How can they appoint a shliach? How can they be mekadesh? How can they do anything? But while they're still children. So for that, and different other Rishonim point out a number of other issues with this with the scenario. So therefore, Tosfos brings a girsa from Rabbeinu Hananel Tosfos brings a girsa from a sefer called Bosser Agabe Gecholim. Bosser Agabe Gecholim. The sefer itself no longer exists, but there are quotations from it here and there in books of the Rishonim. It's called literally Bosser Agabe Gecholim, means meat on top of coals, and it's called that. The various Rishonim who still saw the Sefer said that it's called that because it has such a tam to it. It has such well reasoned halachas and explanations. Like it tastes as good as a good steak on the coals. Anyway, that's the name of the Sefer. So Tosfos brings from that Sefer Bosser Agabe Gecholim. Some say it was written by the Gaonim. Some say it was written by one of the early Rishonim. Anyway, that. He brings a girsa not 13, not before and after 13, but three, before three and after three, and before 12 and after 12. Meaning, in other words, we know that for a girl, that bia with a girl below three is not considered bia in halacha. Obviously, you know, we should clap the guy in jail for a good long time. But as a matter of technical halacha, bia with a girl below age three is not considered bia. So therefore, the scenario would be that the girl became nidda before she was three, and now she's still nidda when she's 12. So that way you have that. So before three, she wasn't yet roi labia, and now at three she is, and therefore all the isurim are chal. And then when she turned 12, then they're all chal on her as well, because between 3 and 12, the isurim would be chal only on their husbands, but not on them, because they're too young to be chayev. Only at 12 would they themselves become chayev. Which in that case, Tosfos adds, in that case, it doesn't necessarily have to be shofos. It doesn't necessarily have to be that she's bleeding continuously from before three until after 12. It just means, in other words, that she became nidda at three and had not yet gone to the mikveh by the time she's 12. So there's a great deal of discussion about this among Rishonim and Achronim about all the ins and outs of that. It's not so simple to change the girsa like that. Okay, we have the Sefer Bosser Agabe Gecholim that changes it, but that explanation itself has difficulties with it. So there's a lot of discussion back and forth. But in any case, now we've constructed a scenario, whether according to Rashi's girsa, whether according to Rabbeinu Tam's, that we have where all four Isurim can be Chal at one moment, and therefore even Reb Shimon would agree that in that case Isur Chal al Isur, and that would be, so that's one way of explaining our Mishnah. Okay, so now the Gemara says, the point is, okay, according to Rabbeinu Tam's Girsa from the Bosser Agabe Gecholim, we don't have to say that the boys turned, we don't have to say like Rashi did, that the boys turned 13. They could already be much older. So therefore, there was no problem of them appointing a shliach to do kedushin for them. And it doesn't have to be that the two boys share a birthday either. Preposterous, I guess we still have to say the girls share the same birthday in order for it to be Isur Basachas from their point of view. But yeah. Okay. The Mishnah had said Mafrishim Oson. So the Mishnah had continued describing our case where we have again these two husbands and two wives where they got mixed up by Knisa L'chupa and each wife went with the wrong husband. So we talked about how many Isurim each of them was over on. Then the Mishnah had continued Mafrishim Oisim Shloisha Chadashim, that we separate the wives from the husbands for three months in case they became pregnant. And if they became pregnant, the children are going to be mamzerim. And therefore, we need to be able to distinguish clearly whether the children that they're going to have are mamzerim or kosher. So the Gemara asks, why do we need to separate them? Isn't it a general rule that a woman does not become pregnant by the first bia? Now, nowadays, that's not necessarily the case. It does happen that women become pregnant from their first bia. So there is some achronim bring the idea that we talk about in different places in Shas, nishtanu ativim, that people's natures have changed since the time of the Gemara, and physiological things that it says that existed at that time don't necessarily now. With that said, the Noda Behorda says maybe even in the times of the Gemara, it was only al derech haroi, for the most part, where it was a very rare thing that women should become pregnant from the first bia, but it could still happen. So according to that, then the question of the Gemara would be, it's so unlikely that why do we make both of them separate from their husbands for 3 months? Now, an obvious point is, the Gemara could easily answer that we're talking about over here, it's not Bia Rishona. We're already talking about that these women were previously married or previously had relations. Various Rishonim talk about different reasons why the Gemara doesn't want to give that answer. Among them are because the Mishnah uses the expression knisasam l'chupa, which implies that the chupa itself completes the kinyan, and that's true only of a b'sula. If it was an almana or whatever, a woman who had already previously had relations, then knisa l'chupa wouldn't be necessary in order for the kinyan to be completely chal. Another point that one of the Rishonim makes is this kind of scenario that we're talking about, where the two of them mixed each other up, is highly unlikely to happen, and what makes it slightly more possible to happen is if the husbands and wives didn't really know each other well. Namely, he was a virgin, she was a virgin, and they didn't really know each other that well, and therefore when they went to have relations, they got mixed up. As opposed to if she's already a previously married woman, you would expect her to know, and it would be highly unlikely for her to get mixed up like that. There's a number of different answers that are given. Anyway, the Gemara is assuming over here we're talking about Bia Rishona. So again, then the question is that never, or at least very rarely, do women get pregnant from such a thing. So why do we need the 3 months? The answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avavor, Shabal Rishonu. Because we're talking about where the husbands didn't just have relations with them once. We're talking about where they had relations a second time as well, right there on that same night. Well, the second time already, they already broke. The Gemara's assumption is the first time is needed in order to break the besulim. Once that's gone, then she can become pregnant. Now, nowadays, by the way, we can technically what it is dam besulim, the blood that comes from the hymen being broken, is not really dam nida. In principle, therefore, even though she's bleeding after that, she's not also to her husband, and they could have relations as many times as they want until she actually becomes nida. Nowadays, we don't do that because we don't really have the expertise to tell between dam nida and dam besulim, and there's always the possibility that there is some dam nida mixed in over there that maybe because of her passion, dam chimud it's called, maybe a little blood came out of the uterus. So therefore, in practice, what we say is when they're after first relations, they have to separate, and we treat it almost like nida with a couple of slight differences in order to demonstrate that we know that there is a difference. So therefore, so nowadays this kind of thing shabala with shanu wouldn't be possible, but in the times of the Gemara it was. Okay, so the Gemara says well then, how does that fit with what Rav Chiya had taught in the Braisa that we learned before, that you have altogether as a result of the scenario in our Mishnah 16 chatois, because each of them is bringing 4 chatois. In that case, if they had relations twice, Chlos and the Tartan have you, and then you have 32, because you have to double the number of chatois because of the number of bias. So the Gemara says, Nu, and according to your Svara, literally Yezer. Then in fact, our Mishnah might be according to Rabbi Eliezer. Well, Rabbi Eliezer, the Mechayev or Kokoyach Bekoyach. Rabbi Eliezer is actually Mechayev when it comes to any Bia Asura. Rabbi Eliezer says that every Koyach, every thrust is its own Chiyuv Chatas. So therefore, according to him, Tuva Abyon, you're going to have far more than that, because realistically, they did a lot more than just Hara. There's a lot of thrusts, a lot of motions, and according to him, you chayev individually for each one. So it'd still be far more than 16. So Ella de Bekoyach Rishon Kachoshiv. Obviously, we have to answer that according to that, if we made our Mishnah go like Rabbi Eliezer, it would mean we're only listing the number of chatois that come from the first koyach, from the first thrust. In other words, that we're not even counting. We're saying the bare minimum of chatois that we're going to have to be bringing is 16 as a result of the scenario. It could, of course, be a lot more. Hachinami de Bir Rishon Kachoshiv. The same way we can answer according to the Chachamim. We can say there was Bala Rishonu, which explains how potentially they could be pregnant, and therefore we have to separate them from their husband, but we're still saying 16 chatois, because we mean, in other words, the bare minimum of chatois that they're chayav at this point is 16. It's potentially, of course, it could be a lot more, depending how many bias they did. However, now the Gemara is going to ask on the premise. So you're telling me that Ein Isha Misaberes Mibir Rishonu, that a woman doesn't get pregnant from the first bia. So now, Amalei Rav of Nachman, how could you say that? What about Tamar, when she was with Yehuda, she became pregnant from the first bia. Now, she had previously been married to Aaron Oinon. However, the Gemara is going to go on to explain soon that Aaron Oinon had had relations with her Shaloi Kedarka. So at the point when she met Yehuda, she was still a Basula. So now, and she became pregnant on the first bia. It had to be the first bia, obviously, because she didn't have a second shot with him. You have the whole story over there in Parshas Vayeshev. She dressed herself up and then convinced Yehuda and so forth. She knew she's not going to have a second opportunity. So how did she become pregnant then? And the answer is, Amalei tells him, so Rav Nachman answers him, Toma be'etzba miyacha. She used her finger to destroy her b'sulim. So before the bia. So that way, the b'sulim are gone. So therefore, that's the equivalent of the two bias. And in fact, the Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. In fact, Rabbi Yitzchak said, "Kol moyachais shabbos Rebbe tomer shman." All the women in Rebbe's household who do that, who remove their besulim by hand before they have relations with their husband, are nicknamed tomer because of that. The loman nikra shman tomer al shem tomer shem miyach ha-be'etzba, because they're acting in that way like tomer. Now, why would they do that? Rishonim explain that the reason would be because they know that after, in the case of Toma, we know why she did. She knew she's only going to have one chance with Yehuda. In the case of the ones in Beis Revi, the idea would be they know that afterwards their husbands are going to be going and learning Torah for many years. So therefore, so they want right away to be able to become pregnant and have children and then help their husbands start fulfilling Pruahu and themselves, as the Gemara is going to point out later in the Masechta. They want to have children as soon as possible also. So therefore, they would take these steps in order to make it more likely that they're going to actually become pregnant, and then their husbands can go alone for many years, and then they'll already have children. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean that we need to ask anyway about what Tamar did? Wasn't she previously married to Er and then to Oinon? And the answer is, Erva Oinon, Shimshu Shaloi Kedarka. The answer is, they had relations with her Shaloi Kedarka, and therefore they didn't touch her Besodim. By the way, on the pasuk over there, the Evan Ezra brings from somebody named Ben Tomim. His name is Rabbi Daniel Ben Tomim. He was an early Rishon who lived in Babel, who explains in the pasuk over there. It says on Oinon particularly, it says Shichei Sa'arza, where this Ben Tomim, this Rabbi Nadiyahu Ben Tomim, wants to explain that the word Arza actually means Shaloi Kedarka, because it literally means like the part of her that sits on the ground. The Eben Ezra doesn't like that explanation at all. However, we see here in the Gemara that it is maybe based on that pasuk, maybe not. The Rashash says over here that maybe in fact the Gemara is using this Rabbi Yehu's Pirush, but be that as it may, the Gemara over here is understanding that they were Meshamash Shaloi Kedarka and therefore her B'sulim were still intact. The Gemara says, Mesri, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Kol Esrim Ba'ba Chodesh Doshim B'Pnim B'Zodim Machotz, when a man is having relations with his wife throughout the 24 months when she's nursing their baby. Now, the problem is, if she becomes pregnant during that time, it's going to cause her milk to go bad. We touched on this briefly in the first paragraph, and therefore it's going to be harmful for the baby. So we want to take steps during those 24 months to avoid her becoming pregnant. So Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, says that during those 24 months, Dosh Mibifnim V'Zoyra Mibachuz, it can be threshing on the inside and winnowing on the outside, which is Gemara's way of saying, in other words, that he pulls out before he ejaculates, and that way it doesn't go inside her, and that way she won't become pregnant. But the Chachamim said to Rabbi Eliezer, that doesn't work. Halolo ena el kamaise erva oinon. Doing that is acting like Aaron and Oinon did. In other words, the Chachamim are understanding that Aaron and Oinon did have relations with her; they just pulled out. Well then. In that case, we see they had relations with her, so she was no longer a basula by the time she met Yehuda. So why would we talk, why were we even asking the question what she needed to do in order to make sure to become pregnant? So the answer is no. What they mean is kimaisa erva onan v'loy kimaisa erva onan. They mean that it was similar to the way of Aaron Onan, in that Aaron Onan had relations in a way that's not going to get her pregnant, but not exactly the same. Kimaisa erva onan, namely in a certain sense, this doshim v'fnim v'zodim v'chutz, pulling out, is in a way like Aaron Onan. D'chtiv, as the pasuk says, v'hoyoyim boil eshes ocha v'shiches aretza. It says when Onan, that Yehuda had told Onan, go have relations, go marry your brother's wife and do yibum with her. And Onan knew, the pasuk says, ki loy lo yiazora, that the children are not going to be considered of his. So therefore, when he had relations with her, v'hoyoyim boil eshes ocha, when he had relations with her, v'shiches aretza, he would waste it on the ground. So therefore, so we see that that's kemasa erva onan, v'loy kemasa erva onan. However, it's not exactly the same. Because the difference is here with this case of the woman who's nursing, we're talking about that he's doing bia kedarka. He's just pulling out, as opposed to by erva onan, we're saying that it was shaloy kedarka. Tosfos gets into some discussion over here. Does this imply that it is in fact also to be mishamash shaloi kedarka? Because we're saying over here that Aaron Onan did that, and then they were actually chayiv misa for it. Tosfos contrasts that with a Gemara in Nedarim that seems to imply that it would be mutter. So Tosfos discusses that there can be a difference whether he's actually motzi zera or not, and also Tosfos mentions an idea that there's a difference between doing it regularly, and he means to be mashkes zera. Obviously, doing it shalei kedarka is not going to make it possible for her to become pregnant, as opposed to when he has once in a while. Tosfos says bakrai ba'alma, once in a while he has a taiva for that, then it would be mutter. So there's a good deal of discussion about this among the Rishonim and the Achronim. The Rambam writes on the face of it somewhat similarly. He says that so in other words, according to the Rambam, also similar to one answer in Tosfos, he would be mutter, but not with Hitzas Zera. Then there are, then again, according to the other answer of Tosfos, if it's Bakrai Ba'alma, it would be mutter, even to be Motzi Zera like that. So there's a lot of discussion about it in Shulchan Aruch and Evan Ezer, Simon Chopay, and Noisa Kalim over there, what exactly is and isn't mutter. The consensus is the Beis Yosef says, for example, it's pretty hard to be mocked, pretty difficult to be mocked with such a thing. So the Maisa, if there really is a case where a couple needs that for whatever reason, then that's something to ask for Rob in private. But Bederach Klal was saying that not. Anyway. In that connection, actually, one of the Noisa Kalim on Shulchan Aruch brings something from Sefer Charedim that says when Tosfos says over here about Krai Ba'alma might mean only once in the person's entire lifetime would he be allowed to try that. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Bishlema Oinon d'chtibbe b'shichas aretza. So we understand Oinon did that. The Pasuk explicitly says that he wasted his seed, whether it was that he pulled out or whether it was Shaloi Kedavra. Ela Erim Nolan, where do we see that Er did that? Because the pasuk says Hashem killed also him, Onan, meaning Ahu Ba'osa Misemes, implying that he died for the same reason as Er. By Er, it just says that he was Rabba Eni Hashem, he was evil in Hashem's eyes, by Misehu Hashem, and therefore Hashem killed him. By Onan, it says Gam Oisa, implying that there was a similarity between them, so both of them did for the same reason. Well, the question is, Bishlema Onan Mishum Loi Loi Azara. We understand why Onan did that, because the pasuk describes he knew the children are not really going to be considered his. In a certain sense, in a ruchnistic sense, it would be considered that these children are really his brother Er's children, and he's only having them on his behalf. So therefore, he was selfish and didn't want to do that. Ela Er my time over. Why did Er do that in the first place? What was his problem? And the reason is because he figured Kadesh let this Abba be Yachesh Yopia, because he didn't want her to become pregnant, and then that would ruin her beauty. He was into her beauty. He didn't want that to get ruined by pregnancy. You find it says by the Dora Mabel, you have something similar. You have over there about Lemech with his two wives, Oda and Silla, where one of them he had relations with in order to have children, and the other one he kept around just as a showpiece because he didn't want her to become pregnant. So here with Er and Tomer, we're saying he did the same thing. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. On this topic, further on this topic of Ein Ishim Isaberes Mevi'a Rishayna. Now, In last week's parasha, we said that if a, when a couple has relations, it says that if a man and woman have relations, then she becomes Tomei, and both of them become Tomei, and she has to Toivel as well. So Rashi explains on the pasuk over there that it's really gzeiras melech. There's no logical reason why she should become tamei, because the fact that her body touched the shechvas zera is neither here nor there. It's called bias storim. It's maga beis storim. Where it was touched was in a covered over area of her body, which is not normally matamei, but it's gzeiras melech that she's tamei. However, the bride says ois. The pasuk says v'ish Rashi ishkab ish oisa shechvas zera. So the word oisa is a mute. So oisa prapla kala divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says that comes to exclude that a kala, her first relation with her husband, is not tomei from shechvas zera, for the reason that the Gemara is going to explain soon. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, b'chamim prapla shaloi kedarka. The Chum say it means to exclude shaloi kedarka. If they had relations shaloi kedarka, then she's not tomei from shechvas zera, because again, it's maga beis astorim. It's touching a hidden area, covered over area of her body. Only gzeres akosiv, that only when it's kedarka would that be an issue. But here it's shaloi kedarka, so not. So the Gemara says, Omale hoin breid Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman. So hoin, that was his name. So hoin, the son of Rav Nachman, asked Rav Nachman, why would Rav Yehuda hold that a kala is potter from tevila for this? Can we say that Rav Yehuda would hold the Torah has the Torah is concerned about the makeup of the kala? The kala was made up for her wedding. Now, the night after the wedding, if she has to go tovel, then there goes all that makeup. It all dissolves into the water. So maybe we say that, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say the Torah patered her tevila on the night after their wedding, on the night after the first via, in order not to ruin her makeup. Amalei, so Rabbi Nachman tells him that's not the reason. The reason is, Mephisha in Isha Mesaberes, Mibi Rishona. Because, as we said before, a woman doesn't get pregnant from the first via. Again, according to most Mephoshim, never, and according to Noi to be Yehuda, only very rarely. So therefore, so they say that's not included in what the pasuk is talking about. So the my committee, what's the underlying machlokes? Rabbanan Savri, the Chachamim, who hold that even a kala has to tovel, and they say only shaloi kedarka is included. They say shichvas zera prat lahara. The word shichvas zera implies that there was actual zera involved, implying that there was not only hara, where there was more than just hara, where later on in the sechta, we're going to talk about the exact definition of hara, but it means basically the first contact of him with her, of his organ with hers. So in other words, the Chachamim would say just hara alone is not enough to make it that now they have to tovel as a result of having relations. Only shichvas zera, only where there was gemar via and an actual ejaculation. Therefore, oisa prata shaloi kedarka, and therefore the word oisa comes to exclude shaloi kedarka, even though there was zera, but it's not mekoyim zera because it's not the place where she could become pregnant. But a kala is not excluded. But Rabbi Yehuda sava shaloi kedarka b'hara m'shichvas zera nafka. Rabbi Yehuda holds to be memayik shaloi kedarka and hara. We can learn them both from shichvas zera because the fact is neither of those is mazriyah, neither of those is going to make her pregnant. And therefore, oisa, prat the kala. And therefore, he said the word oisa is available to teach us that a kala is potter from this together. Okay. Another point related to this about women becoming pregnant. He also Robin up. So before we were talking about the idea that Einisha Mesaberes from Birishona. Now the Gemara is going to talk about another angle on something that can make that a woman is not going to become pregnant. Amar Robin Amar Ki also Robin Amar Rabbi Yechanan. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained the name of Rabbi Yechanan. When a woman waited after her husband passed away for 10 years, the nisis, and then she got married, then she's not going to have children anymore. The fact that 10 years have passed without her having relations is going to make her infertile. However, Rav Nachman says, though, that's only if she didn't have in mind during those 10 years that she planned to remarry. But if she does have intentions during those 10 years to become pregnant, to get married, misaberes, then she can still become pregnant. Because that thought has an effect on her body and makes it that she's still going to be able to be fertile. Interesting thing in that connection, by the way, in Megillas Rus, you have the beginning of the story over there. You have when Nomi is walking back to Eretz Yisrael together with her daughters and more Rus and Orpah, and she's trying to convince them to go back to Eretz Moav and give up on it. What kind of future do you have with me? So she says, listen, what are you thinking? You're going to marry future children of mine? Even if I got married tonight and I had children, you'd have to wait till those children grow up. So in fact, there's an explanation from I think in the Medrash or in Mefarshim that say that what she was telling them is tonight is actually going to be the 10th anniversary since my husband Ali Melech passed away. So tonight is going to be 10 years since I last had relations. So therefore, if I were to get married tonight, hypothetically, I could still have children, but then you'd have to wait for them to grow up. But if we wait any longer than tonight, that wouldn't even be possible anyway. So there's an example of this idea of the 10 years. So the Gemara tells, Omale Rava Labastra Chista. One time Rava says to his wife, who was the daughter of Rav Chista, Komerani Rabbanan Abastra. The Chachamim are spreading rumors about you. Because what happened was she had previously been married to Rami Bachama. Then Rami Bachama died or divorced her. Then only many years later did she marry Rava. So Rava is telling you, people are wondering, it was more than 10 years, how are you and I having children? So she tells him, she tells him, all this time, during these 10 years, I had you in mind. I was always thinking I'm going to eventually marry you. Now, why is that? Why didn't she approach him anytime during the 10 years? So Rabbi Natan brings like this. The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us a story involving the same daughter of Rav Chista that when she was younger, when she was still a girl, she was one time sitting on Rav Chista's lap while he was teaching his Talmidim. And among his Talmidim were Rami Bachoma and Rava. And Rav Chista asked his daughter, which one of them would you like to marry? And she, the Gemara mentions over there that children have a degree of Ruach HaKodesh, she said, I'd like to marry both of them. And when Rava heard that, he realized that she has a shtickle Ruach HaKodesh, as children do, and he said, V'anno Basra, in that case, I want to be the last one. So therefore, what happened was, sure enough, first she married Rami Bachama, and then later on, he passed away, or he divorced her, and then Rava married her. So now, what happened was, though, Tosfos said, so she knew all along, she remembered this that she had said as a child, that she's going to end up marrying Rava, but she also, in between, Rava had another wife. Now, it's true, of course, this is long before Chayim Deir Ben Gershim, Rava could marry a second wife as well. However, she assumed that Rava is not going to be willing to marry a second wife while his first wife is alive. So only once his first wife passed away or he divorced her, then she proposed to Rava. So that's why there was this 10 years. But nevertheless, she had in mind during all those 10 years that she plans to marry Rava because she knew that one day this childhood nevuah of hers is going to come true. So therefore, nobody should be spreading any rumors or wondering or whatever, because the fact is that it's exactly as we said, that she had in mind to remarry, and I had in mind to remarry specifically to you. Another example, the Gemara says, Hahida asked the Kamei de Rabbi Yosef, a woman once came to Rabbi Yosef, Omrele Rebbe Anosha Hisiach Abayli Eseshon Bialati, she tells him, I waited for 10 years after my husband died, and still now I had a child. Omrullah, he tells her, Bitti, I'll take ti laz, I'll divrei chachamim. He says to her, my daughter, not she's not his daughter, but that's a style of speaking to a younger person, don't be moti laz, I'll divrei chachamim. The chachamim say 10 years, that means don't start spreading, don't start claiming that the chachamim don't know what they're talking about. So she answers him, actually, you should know that during those 10 years, I had relations with a goy. So in fact, there was during the 10 years. Now, so what's going on over here? First, she's claiming that I didn't have relations, and then all of a sudden, she's admitting that she's admitting she had relations with a goy. So actually, the Maharshal has an interesting explanation about it. He says what happened was, she's saying, the goy actually raped me. So therefore, it wasn't my fault. However, I did have a certain hannah from that, because sometimes as difficult as it is to say, even something that a person is forced into, they can still have a certain enjoyment from it. So now she's saying, I want to do tshuvas hamishkal. Now I want to do, sometimes there's a concept of doing tshuva to the same degree as you enjoyed the avera, to do tshuva to the same degree. So now she's telling Rabbi Yosef that, now I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to have the same way as I had enjoyment from something wrong like that involving the goy. Now I want to make sure, please help me do tshuva. And that's why she's mentioning this point to him in the first place.
Yeah, so we'll stop over here and we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Yes, Shikaya.